Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Forest Kingdom Saga, Beyond the Blue Moon. Narrated by Terrence Aselford, with performances by Danny Gavigan, Ren Casey, Eric Messner, Thomas Keegan, Margie Tompros, Christopher Graybill, Casey Platt, Christopher Sheeran, Michael Glenn, Scott McCormick, Ted Stoddard, M.B. Van Dorn, Colleen Delaney, James Konacek, Ken Jackson, Yasmin Toison, Tim Getman, Joe Brack, Nanette Savard, Michael John Casey, Richard Rowan, Andy Clements, and Mort Shelby. Beyond the Blue Moon, Part 3. Queen Felicity hugged herself tightly to stop from falling apart. She could cope with this. She'd coped with worse in her time. Nothing could destroy her anymore. And if she'd become hard over the years, well, she'd had to become hard, because the only other alternative was to be torn apart by all the opposing forces in her life.
You are Queen Felicity. Be the queen.
She pulled the authority of the queen about her. It was a cold comfort, but better than none. The court's main doors swung slowly open, and Callie and Sir Vivian peered cautiously in. On seeing the queen alone, they entered the court, and a collection of the braver courtiers filed slowly in behind them. Felicity went back to her throne and seated herself carefully, her head held high, her chin firm, her gaze cold and forbidding enough to discourage all but the most polite and general of questions. Callie took up her usual position beside the throne without saying anything, for which the queen was quietly grateful. Sir Vivian took up a position standing before the throne, while roughly a third of the normal number of courtiers spread out behind him, unusually quiet and subdued. There was a certain amount of craning of necks as they looked worriedly about them for some trace of the walking man.
Welcome back, my loyal attendants. Perhaps in future, we should forget all about your solemn oath to protect the throne and just issue you all some running shoes. For now, you will no doubt be happy to hear that I am entirely unharmed and in no danger. Neither are any of you, as long as you behave yourselves while the walking man is here. He has given me his word. He is here solely to deal with the problem of the inverted cathedral. So unless any of you are stupid enough to bring yourselves to his attention, you should be safe. Any of you with really guilty consciences should consider locking yourselves in your rooms till he's gone. Hiding under the bed might not be a bad idea either.
Queen Felicity's stock had risen dramatically just for having survived a meeting with the dreaded walking man, let alone with such aplomb, though every one of the courtiers would have given good money to know just what he and she had talked about for so long. A queen regent backed by the Starlight Duke was worry enough. A queen backed by the walking man was enough to make them want to change their underwear without delay. A great many plans would have to be reconsidered and possibly dropped, at least until the walking man left Forest Castle. The queen let them mutter and turned her attention to Sir Vivian, still standing at parade rest before her.
Our thanks to you too, Sir Vivian. You were ready to put your life on the line to protect me. I won't forget that. Though I suppose I should have expected nothing less from the hero of Tower Rouge. But your methods came as something of a surprise. I never knew you were a magician of such power.
It's not something I'm proud of, Your Majesty.
Thank you anyway, High Commander, for staying when everyone else fled. I have never doubted your courage, but it is good to know I can depend on your honor as well.
Felicity turned to Callie.
Not a word, no. We'll talk later.
Callie nodded and then looked at Sir Vivian, surprising him with an approving smile. He nodded stiffly back. He wasn't used to such praise from women, and honestly didn't know how to react to it. Truth be told, it made him feel more nervous than facing the walking man. Among the returned courtiers, various cliques and factions formed to mutter animatedly with each other and discuss the ramifications of the walking man's presence and Sir Vivian's new powers. The whole balance of power in the castle was up for grabs now, and everyone knew it. The queen watched them talk themselves into a major panic and smiled sardonically. Callie watched the queen watching the court and frowned thoughtfully. She remembered the man who'd gone on to become the walking man, remembered how he broke Felicity's heart by leaving. Right now, he was a complication the queen didn't need. Callie's frown became a scowl as she looked ahead and saw nothing but trouble. It was nothing like the return of an old love to unreason one's reason. Sir Vivian stood stiffly before the throne, his thoughts moving furiously behind the cold mask of his face. His secret was out now. Soon the whole castle would know. For all his efforts on the battlefield, for all his attempts to be a hero as other men, for all his endless restraint, he had become the only thing he never wanted to be, the Warlock's son. In fact, as well as in name. No one would ever see him as anything else now. And what worried him most of all, and squeezed his heart with a cold fist, was how natural it felt to wield such powerful magics. How natural and how good. How very good. Like something he was born to do. Sir Vivian fought a desperate battle to control his feelings and the new ambitions rising slowly within him. Vivian wondered what he would do next. Hawk and Fisher sat together in a small, quiet antechamber and compared notes on their day so far. They were both bone-deep weary, but they stubbornly put their heads together and plowed through what little useful information they'd gathered. Because they knew that if they put their feet up and relaxed, even for a moment, they'd probably sleep for a week. Unfortunately, even after all their interviews, they still didn't have much worth discussing. Practically everyone had had some motive to kill King Harold, but no one had also had the means and the opportunity. Or at least not in any combination that made sense. Fisher still wanted it to be her father on general principle, but had to admit there was no real hard evidence against him. Their arguments went in circles for some time without getting anywhere. Fisher moved to the door. She looked out into the corridor, then turned and looked at Hawk, who'd already risen to his feet.
Duke's men, 20 of them, heading straight for us. What do we do?
There was a time when 10-to-1 odds wouldn't have bothered us much, but in our current state, I'm not so sure. I don't think they'd kill us, but they might work us over again.
Should we run?
Do you want to?
I couldn't bear to see you hurt again. You know the castle better than they do. We could lose ourselves till they get tired of looking.
No, we don't run. Not ever. Not for my sake or ours. Because if we run, everyone will know we're weak. That those bastards have broken our spirit as well as our bodies. The news would spread all over the castle. No one would talk to us anymore. And besides, we're Hawk and Fisher. We don't run. That's part of who and what we are.
Of course. I forgot that for a moment. Better to stand and fight and maybe die. Because if we don't, we wouldn't be ourselves anymore.
Yes.
He drew his axe and Fisher drew her sword. And they stood together in the middle of the room, watching the door. It took all their strength just to hold their weapons steady. 20 of the Duke's men stamped into the room. They came to an abrupt halt and stared at Hawk and Fisher a little uncertainly, taken aback by the drawn weapons. The Duke's men looked at one another for a moment, and then their leader stepped forward. A big man, with muscles on his muscles. He tucked his thumbs into his sword belt and did his best to fix Hawk with an imperious gaze.
I'm Hawk. I speak for the Starlight Duke. He gives you a deadline. Either produce a viable suspect for King Harold's murder by midday tomorrow, or he commands you to leave Forest Castle, never to return. The Duke will then merge Hillsdown and the Forest Kingdom by force of arms, in the name of his grandson, Stephen. The Duke will, of course, rule this new country until Stephen comes of age. If you stay or seek to interfere in any way, you will be killed. You're also commanded to stay well away from the inverted cathedral, also on pain of death. That is all.
Very nicely memorized. 10 out of 10 for content, but you need to work on the menace more. It's all in the delivery.
Fisher looked at Hawk.
Why would he care about the inverted cathedral?
Because whatever weapons, treasures, or powers are to be found there, the Duke presumably wants them for himself. Or at least he wants only his people, or people under his control, getting their hands on such things. And he doesn't want us in particular getting involved, because either we'd give what we found to the Queen so she could be more independent of her father, or we might keep them for ourselves and become even more of a danger to him.
Yeah, that sounds like the Duke. Now, are you going to give this asshole the bad news, or am I?
Me first, then you.
Hawk smiled at Hogg, the Duke's spokesman. It was a confident, happy, and really rather unpleasant smile.
I noticed Duke Ulrich didn't come himself. That's because he wasn't dumb enough to deliver such a speech in person. He knew Fisher and I would take turns kicking his ass until he could use his buttocks for earmuffs. You can go back to your master and tell him that Hawk and Fisher don't give a damn what he wants. We will go where we choose, do as we will, and make stew meat out of anyone who gets in our way. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking there's 20 of you versus two people who recently got the crap kicked out of them. Well, we may not be exactly all that we used to be, but you will observe that all our injuries are gone. And 10-to-1 odds or not, we're better than you'll ever be. If you rush us all at once, there's a chance you'll bring us down in the end, but we'll kill a hell of a lot of you along the way. So, which of you are willing to die so that some of your fellows might win out? How much does the Duke pay you guys? Does it include funeral expenses?
Enough talk. I feel like killing someone.
Hawk grinned his old wolf's grin, his axe steady in his hand. Fisher grinned too, and there was no humor at all in her unrelenting gaze. Hawk fell back a step. Then he turned and almost ran from the room, his men hurrying out after him. Hawk and Fisher waited until they'd heard the Duke's men retreat a fair way down the corridor. Then they lowered their suddenly very heavy weapons, staggered over to the nearest chairs, and sat down.
Oh, damn, we're good.
Oh, yeah. Of course, it helped that we weren't bluffing. We were ready to fight, and they knew it. They just couldn't believe we'd be ready to take on such odds if we weren't up to it.
We've got to do something about this, Hawk, before we run into someone who's too dumb to be fooled.
There is another way. I've been thinking more and more of all the good I could do if I were to reveal who I really am. If I declared myself Prince Rupert, I have the royal seal. Chance would back me up. As prince, I'd have the authority to order the right things done. The people would flock to me as they did before. The Duke would think twice about leading an army against forces led by the legendary Prince Rupert. I could put that legend to good use for once. Do I have the right to deny my duty just because I don't want to take up my family responsibilities? I was always frustrated by my lack of authority back in Haven, by the lack of power to do something about all the evil I saw every day. As Prince Rupert and Princess Julia, we could make people do the right thing, force them to do what's necessary by sheer royal authority.
Isn't that what Harold tried to do?
I'm not my brother. As prince and princess, our physical weakness wouldn't matter. We could just order people like Chance and Sir Vivian to do the hard work for us.
You're not thinking this through. Once you put the crown on, you could never take it off. To get the kind of authority you're talking about, you'd have to put aside the Queen Regent and your nephew Stephen and become King Rupert, ruler of the Forest Kingdom. Our lives would never be our own again. Isn't that why we left here in the first place?
I know, but perhaps it's my duty to be king.
What about your duty to me?
The window burst open and rain poured into the room, only to stop short barely halfway across the room. As Hawk and Fisher watched open-mouthed, the water pressed together to form a solid pillar, blue and glistening, before slowly shaping itself into a human form. The spraying rain cut off abruptly, and there before Hawk and Fisher stood a woman made all of water. 6 feet tall and clear as crystal, she wore a long dress, but it and her form were entirely fluid, with long, slow ripples flowing through her. The long hair that fell to her shoulders ran constantly away, constantly renewing itself. Beads of water ran steadily down her face like endless tears and dripped from her chin. She turned her head slowly to look at Hawk and Fisher, and her pale blue mouth moved in a gentle smile.
All right, you win the prize for the weirdest thing I've seen today. Who might you be?
I am the Lady of the Lake, an elemental protector of the forest.
More ripples spread across her face as her lips moved. She walked slowly around the room, studying it. A fire in a grate steamed when she got too close to it, and she left a wet trail behind her. With no sign of feet beneath the long dress, she seemed to glide more than walk, like a watery spirit. She turned back to face Hawken Fisher.
I have come to protect the castle once you have gone into the inverted cathedral.
Hold everything. We haven't decided we're going to do that yet. We still have a murder to solve.
You will go into the cathedral because you have to.
Lady, who or what are you exactly?
I was created around the spirit of a woman who drowned herself. She wanted to escape from a world she found intolerable. But the world wasn't finished with her. There had been an earlier Lady of the Lake, but she was gone, and a new protector was needed. And so a mortal soul became immortal, as the spirit of the waters. But not long after my creation, while I was still weak and inexperienced, the demon prince used wild magic to contain me in my lake. I became a helpless captive. I knew what was happening to the land as the long night spread, but I was unable to intervene. After the demon prince was banished, I emerged, took on my full powers, and I have spent my time since slowly helping and encouraging the regrowth of the forest. The land was badly damaged during the long night, and I fear parts of it may never recover, even with my help. Now, a dark time threatens us again, and I have come here to warn you. I have avoided human contact until now, partly because I didn't want to meet people who might have known me while I was still alive, and partly because I'm not human anymore. I remember what it was like, but I must take a larger view now.
Why choose us to reveal yourself to?
Because I knew I could trust Prince Rupert and Princess Julia. I am the Lady of the Lake, and nothing is hidden from me.
Oh, great. Another complication. Try and remember we're Hawk and Fisher these days if you have to talk to anyone else.
The Lady of the Lake didn't seem to be listening. She was looking around the room again. It was hard to read the expressions on her watery face, but Hawk thought she looked sad. She brought her hand to her mouth, and for a moment her fingertips merged seamlessly with her lips.
It's been a long time since I was last here, when I was still alive. It hasn't changed much. That's the castle's strength and its weakness.
Do you really live in a lake?
The lady smiled at Fisher.
I am the lake. Wherever water flows in the forest, I am there. I exist in every stream and brook, every waterfall and rainstorm. I am a part of the land now. I've been watching you ever since you entered the forest. Everything here has been waiting for your arrival. Now that you are here, destiny can finally begin to unfold. It is your fate to enter the inverted cathedral and do what must be done there.
We don't have to do a damn thing we don't want to. And what the hell is so important about us going into the inverted cathedral anyway? Seems like everybody wants us to go in there.
The blue moon will be here soon. Full and potent to reign over a world of unleashed wild magic. An endless nightmare for whatever humans survive in it. Only you can prevent this. It's why you came back here.
We came back of our own free will to discover Harold's murderer.
You already know who killed him. You just don't want to admit it yet.
Hawk looked at her for a long moment.
I know you from somewhere, don't I?
I'd like to think so.
The lady smiled at Hawk, and he smiled back, strangely drawn to her, though he didn't know why. Fisher watched all this and felt a bit left out.
I can cure you both. I know what has happened to you and how weak you are. I can make you whole and strong again.
Is that a bribe? Conditional on us going into that damned cathedral?
No. It is my gift to you. Whatever you decide to do.
The Lady of the Lake held out her hands to Hawk and Fisher, and water fell from her palms and fingers like splashing waterfalls.
Come to me and drink of my waters and be whole again. The strength of the forest land flows through me. drink of the land and be its champions again.
Hawk and Fisher looked at each other. They both wanted to ask what the catch was, but the words wouldn't come. They knew they were in the presence of something bigger than themselves. Some aspect of the land itself was in the room with them. They bowed their heads to the Lady of the Lake and drank of the water flowing from her hands. It was cold and fresh, like water from a mountain spring, and as they swallowed, they could feel it coursing through their bodies like a tidal bore, slow but irresistible, washing away all the detritus of their lives. Strength filled their arms and legs and straightened their backs. All their pains were gone, and their minds were suddenly, almost painfully, clear. The Lady of the Lake withdrew her hands, and Hawk and Fisher grinned at her, feeling fit and well and wholly alive for the first time in ages. The door opened behind them, and they both spun around, weapons at the ready, to find themselves confronting Chance and Sir Vivian, standing somewhat startled in the doorway. Hawk and Fisher put away their weapons and smiled radiantly at their visitors.
"Sorry to intrude."
Chance looked with interest at the smiling Lady of the Lake.
"Are we interrupting anything?"
"I am the Lady of the Lake. I am an elemental champion of the land, come to protect it in its hour of need. It is good to meet you at last, Sir Questor, Sir Vivian."
Sir Vivian looked at Chance.
"I don't know why we bother having any security in this castle. People come and go as they damn well please these days."
"Be that as it may, Jericho Lament, the famous or infamous, depending on which version you listen to, walking man, is here in the castle. And he wants to talk to the pair of you, right now. And even sooner than that, if possible."
"I've heard of him, but I thought he was just some sort of rural legend."
"Oh, he's real enough, unfortunately. And altogether far more powerful than I feel comfortable contemplating. Please, come and talk with him before he starts looking for more evil people to punish."
"If we must."
Fisher looked at Hawk.
"Wanna bet he wants us to go into the cathedral as well?"
"No bet. Though, if truth be told, right now I feel strong enough to dismantle an entire cathedral with my bare hands, brick by brick, if I had to. Or kick the walking man's ass around to the front, if it came to it."
"Please, don't even consider it. I hate to think how much damage the two of you could cause if you really got into it."
Sir Vivian had been looking closely at the Lady of the Lake, and he took a sudden step forward.
"I know you. I know who you are."
"Of course you do. But you mustn't tell."
She smiled at him, and he sank on one knee before her. She put a hand on his shoulder, as if in blessing, and water ran down his arm. He didn't notice. He looked up at her with earnest, almost tearful eyes, and something passed between him and the lady that the others saw but couldn't comprehend. The lady raised Sir Vivian up from his knee, and the two of them left the room together. Chance looked at Hawk and Fisher.
"Do you know what that was all about?"
"Haven't a clue. But then I feel that way about a lot of things these days."
"Oh, good. I'd hate to think it was just me."
"I used to understand what was going on in the castle. Hell, keeping on top of things was part of my job, but lately I might as well be walking around with a bag over my head and a sign on my back saying, 'Kick me, I'm stupid.'"
Chance shook his head slowly.
"Look, we need to talk about the walking man. Please, don't do anything to upset him. He is immensely powerful, utterly devoted to his cause, and has about as much sense of humor as a dead frog. If you irritate him, he'll probably kill you, and anyone else who happens to be around at the time. He says God talks to him and tells him to kill people. In my experience, the best thing to do with people like that is just nod and smile and go along with it in the hope he'll move on somewhere else."
"We used to know this guy in Haven who used to hear God talking to him. Apparently God told him to recite bad poetry in public and expose himself to nuns."
"Until he tried it on the Street of Gods, and the Little Sisters of the Immaculate Razor turned him into a jigsaw right there on the street."
"Oh, we know about the walking man. He's a legend, even down in the Southern Kingdoms. But we're legends, too. We can look after ourselves."
"The problem is, unlike most legends, the walking man is even more dangerous than most people think he is. He's killed a hell of a lot of people in his time, not always for reasons the rest of us could understand. I was there at the end of one of his cases, the Dead Hand Abominations and the Wolves of September. Lament had been gone for over an hour, and they were still carrying bodies out of the town."
"And he wants to talk to us. Just as a matter of interest, does anyone know who he's come here to kill?"
"No, but he's already beaten a magic user to death with his bare hands, and that was just something he did along the way."
"He could be after us. We've killed a hell of a lot of people, too, in our time. Always for what we thought were good reasons. But I suppose that's what everyone says.
We'd better go see him. Try not to worry about us, Chance. If Lament gives us any trouble, Isabel and I will send the Walking Man to talk to God in person to explain what went wrong.
I wish I thought you were joking.
Sir Morrison, Lady Esther, and Franz Pendleton, those notable would-be traitors, waited impatiently outside Duke Ulrich's private quarters while the Duke decided whether he wanted to see them or not. Half a dozen armed guards watched them closely with unsympathetic faces. Morrison and Esther sat calmly on their chairs while Pendleton paced nervously up and down before them.
This is taking too long. Something must have gone wrong. He knows why we're here. He should have made up his mind by now. What's taking him so long?
Morrison crossed his legs.
He's just making us wait to demonstrate how important he is. The more important the person, the longer the wait. We'll be lucky if the Duke sees us at all today. Now sit down and stop making an exhibition of yourself. Look at the nice portraits.
Oh, stuff the portraits.
Lady Esther rolled her eyes.
Oh, shut up and sit down. If the Duke gets the impression we're weak and uncertain, he'll walk all over us. It's vital we persuade him that we represent powerful interests he can't afford not to deal with. You embarrass us in there, Pendleton, and I'll kill you myself. Now sit down.
Pendleton sat down on the very edge of a chair, wringing his hands together.
This is bad. Coming here in person. We've always dealt through intermediaries before.
And that's why we haven't gotten anywhere. Our message gets diluted. Our intensity goes unrecognized. Sir Robert was our last hope, and he proved dangerously soft. Didn't have the balls for the kind of direct action needed to grasp power. So we will proceed without him and his expensive advice. If we can persuade the Duke to our cause, we'll be halfway home.
That's a hell of a big if.
The guards gestured silently for the conspirators to go in. They got up and walked into the Duke's private chambers, doing their various best to look calm and collected and like people of power and destiny. The Duke sat in a chair in the middle of the room, held upright by his straps and braces and supports. He didn't even bother to look at his visitors until they were standing right in front of him, and then his gaze was cold and almost openly contemptuous. Morrison and Pendleton bowed low to him, and Esther curtsied. The Duke barely nodded.
You wanted to talk to me, so talk and keep to the point, or I'll have my guards beat it out of you.
Pendleton flinched. The guards had already demanded they give up all their weapons before they were even allowed to wait outside the Duke's quarters. Morrison smiled politely and addressed the Duke in tones of perfect reasonableness.
We are here to present a simple proposition to you, Your Highness. My associates and I represent the landgraves of gold, silver, and copper, and other assorted business interests in the land. We are not as mighty as we once were, but we could be again, with your help. We have extensive information-gathering operatives spread throughout the land, which could be put at your disposal. We're talking about the kind of information, people, places, and troop positions that would be invaluable to you if you found it necessary to invade the Forest Kingdom for its own good. We have no faith in the current regime, who has always failed to recognize our true worth. In short, we offer you vital intelligence in return for your support after you come to power. Our interests are purely economic, not political. All we want is for things to be as they were, when the landgraves were a force to be recognized and valued. Not much to ask for a trouble-free invasion by your armies.
We can even provide armed men to fight beside yours. Mercenaries, but good fighters. And we also command assassins within the castle. We could kill anyone for you, anyone at all.
Good plan. I admire ambition and ruthlessness, but I don't need you. Guards, kill them.
The three conspirators gaped at him, shocked, and then looked quickly about them as the Duke's guards moved smoothly forward to cut them off from the Duke and any escape route. Sir Morrison struggled to find his voice.
You can't do this. We are a people of influence and power.
You are traitors. And no one will miss you.
At least give us back our weapons. Let us fight and die like men.
Do I look stupid?
Bastard!
Sir Morrison threw himself forward, trying to plow through the guards to reach the Duke. The guards cut him down before he was even close. Pendleton broke and ran, and the guards killed him easily. Lady Esther watched her allies die, then pulled a nasty-looking steel pin from her piled-up hair. She held the long pin like a knife, and the guards nearest her hesitated. Lady Esther shot the Duke one last look of defiance, then turned the pin on herself and thrust it through her heart. She had robbed him of the kill. The Duke watched her body crumple lifelessly to the floor.
Dead is dead, and I never did have any time for traitors. Guards, take away the bodies and dispose of them where they won't be found. And clean up the mess. These people were never here.
Chance took Hawk and Fisher to meet Jericho Lament in the Queen's private chamber adjoining the court. No one would disturb them there. No one would dare. Along the way, Chance persevered with his efforts to try and impress on Hawk and Fisher how they should act around Lament. As God's chosen warrior, Lament had no doubts or uncertainties. That made him extremely dangerous and very narrowly focused. You couldn't argue or reason with him, and if you tried to get in his way, he'd just kill you. Hawk and Fisher nodded solemnly. Chance wondered if he had time to stop off and update his will. When Chance finally ushered them into the small chamber, Hawk and Fisher were immediately impressed by Lament's sheer presence. Just standing there, he looked large and holy and altogether menacing, like one of God's nastier angels slumming it in the mortal realms. Hawk wondered for a moment if this was how other people felt when they met him and Fisher, or Prince Rupert and Princess Julia. Hawk felt like he should kneel and ask for a blessing, or at least absolution, but he didn't. Partly because he answered to no other conscience than his own, but mostly because if he was going to have to work with this man, it was important he should see Hawk and Fisher as at least potential equals. So he bowed politely to Lament and glared at Fisher until she did too. Lament bowed politely in return and gestured at the chairs set out. Everyone sat down and pretended they were comfortable. Hawk looked at Lament and wondered what it must be like to always be sure you were doing the right thing. To never have doubts or hesitations, before or after. Hawk had always had doubts, even back when he was Prince Rupert. Perhaps especially then. He looked at Lament, looking at him, and wondered whether such certainty made the walking man more or less than human. Lament steadied his gaze on Hawk.
The blue moon isn't finished with the Forest Kingdom yet. There is a voice within me, the voice of God, and it tells me things. Things you now need to know. I've read certain books from church libraries, old books forgotten or forbidden to those with less authority than I, and what I learned from them has not comforted me. When the Magus opened the rift, joining the north to the south, he upset the balance of wild magic in the world. The rift is maintained by a continuing spell, which uses appalling amounts of wild magic to keep the rift open. It is this growth in magic that has led to the return of the inverted cathedral and made it possible for the blue moon to return. Have you never considered the nature of the blue moon? What kind of sun the blue moon must orbit that it reflects such a terrible light? What kind of world it must orbit that needs such a light? Scholars have been considering these questions for centuries, and nowhere have I found an answer that satisfies me. All I have is a name, perhaps the name of the Blue Moon's world. Reverie.
Lament stopped for a moment to be sure they were taking in what he'd said.
There is only one way the Blue Moon can be prevented from manifesting in our sky again, and that is why God has brought me here. I shall enter the inverted cathedral, cleanse it of evil, and make it holy again, reclaiming it for God. I will bring the cathedral back into the world of men, and it shall spread its sanctity across the land as was originally intended, cancelling out the influence of the wild magic forever.
Hold everything.
Hawk leaned forward. Lament raised an eyebrow at being interrupted, but Hawk pressed on.
Are you talking about reinverting the cathedral? Make it rise up instead of down?
Essentially, yes.
Well, can I just point out that this cathedral is right in the middle of the castle? If it suddenly goes shooting up instead of down, what is that going to do to the surrounding structures? There are whole floors above it.
I don't know what will happen. It isn't important. God's will must be done.
People could die.
People die all the time. How many will die if the blue moon returns and the long night prevails in the world again? I have no wish to see the innocent harmed, but I will do what I must to prevent the triumph of the dark.
All right, let's try this from a slightly different angle. What exactly is it that you're going to do inside the inverted cathedral that will cleanse and reclaim it?
I don't know yet. All I have been told is to enter the cathedral and then proceed as my voice and my experience suggest.
Captain Fisher narrowed her gaze.
You're not much of one for forward planning, are you?
With God guiding my steps, how can I go wrong?
We used to work the Street of Gods in Haven. We met a lot of people who claimed to be doing the work of one god or another. Some of them were nasty bastards, and we had to shut them down. Sometimes we killed them to stop them doing what their gods told them to. You say you hear a voice, Lament. That's fine, but Hawk and I don't. So we just have to do as our consciences dictate. You've got an impressive reputation, Walking Man, but so have we. And we will stop you if it looks like you're threatening the castle's safety, or the lands. So, I think Hawk and I will join you on your little excursion into the inverted cathedral, just to keep an eye on things.
I knew you would. The voice told me so.
Hawk decided to change the subject slightly before Fisher's blood pressure hit a dangerous level.
The Seneschal said he looked at the inverted cathedral with his augmented sight and saw a vision of hell.
Lament shook his head firmly.
No. The cathedral has become a dark and evil place, but it is not itself a province of the Inferno. It does, perhaps, contain a gateway to hell. And if it does, I will close or banish it. I have always done what I must for the greater good.
I used to think that way once. I'm not as sure as I used to be, so whatever you do inside the inverted cathedral, we're going to be right there with you. And Lament, if you do turn out to be just another crazy bastard, we will shut you down.
Suddenly and violently and all over the place.
I knew putting the three of you together in one room was a mistake. I am now officially changing the subject, and I don't want to hear any arguments. Tell me, Sir Lament, there are all kinds of rumors that the inverted cathedral contains hidden treasures and forgotten wonders. What do you think is in there?
The Grail, perhaps. Fragments of the true cross. The mummified heads of saints, still alive and speaking strange truths. The whip that scourged Jesus' back, with the holy blood still dried on it. Even some of the furniture he made for his earthly father. To touch something the Christ touched with his own hands.
Lament smiled suddenly.
I haven't found two books that can agree on the subject, but one thing they all seem sure of. The inverted cathedral contains a true wonder, a thing of great power. Perhaps the source of the cathedral's magic, or the key to its recreation, or its destruction. I am the wrath of God, and if I cannot save the cathedral, I will unmake it.
All right, that does it. I am going into the inverted cathedral with you people. Somebody has to be the quiet voice of reason, and I don't see any other volunteers.
You can't go. I need you here to protect the castle in our absence. There's always the chance something nasty might break loose from the cathedral while we're inside. Remember the killing shadows in the court? And if we don't come back and nothing's changed in the cathedral, someone will have to be here to lead in the next team.
Chance gestured for Hawk to join him. The two men got up and moved to the other side of the room where they could speak quietly and privately. Chance put his head close to Hawk's.
If the powers that be knew who you really were, you wouldn't have to go in alone. You'd have a whole army at your back, ready to follow you into hell itself.
Maybe, but I have a strong feeling an army would just get in the way. Small force might go unrecognized for a long while, and we can use all the advantages we can get. Besides, I don't think this is a struggle that can be won by force of arms. I'll go that far with Lament. Look, I don't know what we'll find when we go all the way down, which is all the more reason not to endanger anyone we don't absolutely have to. And if worst comes to worst, all three of us are expendable.
They broke off as Lament turned suddenly, and his hand snapped out to snatch something from the air. The tiny captive buzzed inside his great fist. Lament's fingers were forced apart as Lightfoot Moonfleet expanded rapidly to full human size. She glared at Lament, then flapped her translucent wings vigorously to make sure they hadn't been crumpled.
Honestly, some men are all hands.
I have no use for spies.
Then you won't go far in politics. Someone's always listening in Forest Castle. You should know that. How did you know I was here?
God sees all. Now leave. I will not tolerate the presence of your kind, soulless tricksters, godless immortals. The fairies have never been a true friend of man. Go back to your master and tell him to wait until I come for him.
Oh, the charm school took your money and ran, did they? See you around, people.
She shrank back down to insect size and flew out the door as it opened, just missing a startled seneschal's head.
My word!
He blinked a few times, ran a hand through what was left of his hair to make sure nothing was caught in it. Then he entered the room. He nodded to Hawk and Fisher and hefted a long, cloth-wrapped bundle in his hands.
I've decided I'm going in there with you. It is undoubtedly a bad idea, and it will all inevitably end in tears. But you wouldn't get 10 feet without my gifts to guide you. Let me make it very clear that I am only here because of emotional blackmail, and that this time I expect to get my fair share of whatever treasures we might find along the way. I didn't care so much about such things when I rediscovered the missing South Wing, but I have a wife and children to support now. I wouldn't mind if I got a pension. I did ask, but apparently no seneschal has ever lived long enough to claim one before, which tells you something if you're paying attention.
You must be the seneschal. You're just as I imagined you. I understood you were crippled with gout.
No, I am. But I had a healer slap a temporary spell on it, so I can't feel it. Can't risk anything stronger, or the magic would interfere with my directional gifts.
The seneschal glared at Fisher.
No doubt I will pay for this later with suffering beyond your ability to imagine. But I couldn't let you go into that awful place without me, if only because if this mission fails, the whole castle could be endangered. So here I am. Ready and willing and not at all resentful.
The guide looked at Hawk.
I brought something for you. Thought it might come in handy if we run into trouble.
He gave his cloth bundle over to Hawk, who looked at it uncertainly for a moment. The bundle seemed unusually heavy, but it was a familiar weight. He unwrapped the cloth with increasingly hurried fingers, and his heart beat faster as he looked at the long sword in its battered scabbard.
The rainbow sword.
I thought someone on this mission should have it, since everyone's been talking about the blue moon coming back. And Captain Hawk seemed the most suitable person to wield it.
Of course.
Chance tore his gaze away from the sword.
Of course, it should be you, Captain.
I am God's representative. If anyone should have that sword...
I wouldn't even give it to you as a suppository. I don't trust your motives, Lament. Never have. I want that sword in the hands of someone I can trust.
Thank you, Sir Seneschal. I hope we won't need it, but having it makes me feel a whole lot better.
He strapped the sword on his hip opposite his axe. The weight was immediately comforting and somehow right, as though the rainbow sword belonged there and always had. Then Chance produced the Hand of Glory he'd used to open the rift outside Haven, and Lament nearly hit the roof.
What the hell is that infamous thing doing here?
The mages created it a while back. I thought the Seneschal could use it to find or force a way into the inverted cathedral.
Good thinking, Questor.
The Seneschal took the mummified hand, inspecting it closely.
I'm glad someone here is thinking ahead.
That is an evil thing, a product of unholy magics and an offense to God.
No stuff and nonsense. It's just a magical tool, no different than any other. Unpleasant to manufacture, I'll admit, but then so is jugged hair.
It is made from the hand of a dead man!
You should see what they do with the rest of the body.
The Seneschal stopped a moment to consider.
Actually, no, you shouldn't. It would put you off tripe and onions for life. Now, stop arguing, let's get a move on. You can lead the way, Sir Lament, since you're so eager.
The Seneschal looked thoughtfully at Lament.
What do you think we're going to find inside the cathedral?
A journey down through the circles of the damned.
Right, that's it. I'm not talking to you anymore.
I'd better get back to the court. I hope by now they'll have recovered from Sir Lament's little visit earlier. Last I heard, they were still fishing politicians out of the moat. Good luck to you all.
He smiled and left. Everyone looked expectantly at Lament, who shook his head slowly.
Perhaps I should do this alone.
Not a hope.
Not in my castle.
Let's go.
They left the room and made their way down the corridor. Fisher found herself beside Lament and groped for some kind of small talk.
I noticed there's a lot more Christian worship going on these days. I suppose the long night gave everybody religion?
Children kneel to Jesus till they learn the cost of nails.
I'm not talking to you anymore.
In a deserted corridor some distance away, Lightfoot Moonfleet flew back to the Magus as fast as her wings could carry her. He had to be told what was happening. He hadn't foreseen the arrival of the Walking Man, or that he would choose to descend into the inverted cathedral, which could mean all the Magus's careful planning had been for nothing. She strained for more speed and hoped she'd reach the Magus in time. They could feel the pressure of the inverted cathedral long before they could see anything. Approaching the warded-off site was like heading toward a dentist with blood dripping from his hands, or a surgeon holding a bone saw caked with dried-on gore. A mixed feeling of alarm and horror and the foreknowledge of unavoidable pain. The last few corridors were deserted, silent, and filled with uneasy shadows. There were no human guards. Nothing human could bear the proximity of the inverted cathedral for long and stay sane. The small group heading into the shadows were four special people, all with some claim to be a little more than human. But even they could feel something terrible waiting ahead of them, pulsing with considered menace and awful intent. When the four of them finally reached the chamber that held the entrance to the inverted cathedral, it came as something of a disappointment. It was only a medium-sized room, maybe 20 feet across, with a 6-foot square trapdoor set right in the middle of the floor. Nothing else. No furniture, no paintings or hangings, and certainly no sign of life, human or otherwise. Only a vague feeling of pressure on the air, like pushing against some unseen barrier, prevented them from walking straight into the chamber. The four of them stood together in the open doorway, the only entry into the silent room, and looked carefully around the empty chamber.
You are sure this is the right place?
Of course I'm sure. My sense of direction is never wrong. And besides, according to my extensive knowledge of Forest Castle's layout, this whole room shouldn't be here. This is supposed to be one long, uninterrupted corridor. And up until 12 years ago, it was. It's an interesting thought. Does this room really exist? Does it have an actual history? Or has it just manifested here to provide an entrance to the inverted cathedral? Was the room built long ago by human strength and skill and sweat? Or is it just a magical construct?
What's the difference?
The Seneschal gave her a pitying look.
If this chamber was actually built by human means, it won't necessarily disappear once the inverted cathedral's magic shuts off. After all, no one knows what might happen once we start messing about inside the cathedral.
Oh, thanks. Now I have a new threat to worry about.
Just doing my job.
What's this pressure I can feel?
The Magus protective wards. He's set up an avoidance spell. Quite a powerful one. Only the strong-willed and those with certain purpose could even look into this room. If we try to enter, the pressure against us will grow stronger. The harder we try to get in, the harder the wards will push us out. How's your willpower these days, Captain Ork?
Oh, it's as strong as hell. And I've been known to be pretty stubborn myself.
I'd never have guessed. All right, you two go in first. See how far you can get. The Seneschal and I will observe you from here and take notes.
Just in case you don't come back.
Hawk and Fisher looked at each other, shrugged simultaneously, hefted their weapons, then stepped cautiously forward into the room. Everything still looked the same, but the sense of pressure was immediately much worse. Hawk's instincts yelled at him to turn and race out of the room. His heart beat frantically in his chest, and his breathing became harsh and hurried. He just knew something bad was going to happen. His hand tightened on the hilt of his axe until his knuckles went white. He glared quickly about him, but the room remained empty. Beside him, Fisher advanced step by unwilling step. Her face was strained and pale, and her eyes were almost painfully wide. Hawk and Fisher looked at each other and shared a humorless smile before pressing on, leaning forward slightly like two runners resting an invisible tape. They were only half a dozen feet into the room, and already Hawk's legs were shaking violently, while his stomach muscles clenched in sympathy. The sense of threat was so real now he could almost touch it. Sweat ran down his face and dripped from his chin. He couldn't even look around to see how Fisher was doing anymore. He had to concentrate all the willpower he had into taking the next step and the next. His whole world had narrowed into the room ahead of him and the trapdoor straight ahead. So he was very surprised when all the lights went out and darkness engulfed him. The pressure was suddenly gone, and the two captains stumbled forward a few steps before recovering. The darkness was absolute, no matter which way they turned. For a horrible moment, Hawk thought he was back in the Darkwood, alone and abandoned.
No, I'm not afraid of darkness anymore. Fisher! Lament! Seneschal!
There was no reply.
Am I in the same chamber anymore?
Perhaps he and Fisher triggered some hidden spell of the Magus's, and they had been transported somewhere else. He had a feeling of space around him, but no way of knowing how great that space was. Hawk had to consider the possibility that he was indeed back in the rotten heart of the Long Night and the Darkwood, where it was always dark, dark enough to break anyone. He knelt down and touched the floor beneath him, and relief flooded through him as he felt bare wooden boards with his hand. He was still in the room. He straightened up, angry at how close he'd come to losing control, and moved cautiously forward over the wooden floor, his empty hand stretched out before him. He had a box of matches on him, but lighting one would mean putting away his axe, if only for a moment, and he didn't feel like doing that just yet. Besides, who knew what light might attract in darkness like this? And then there was a light some distance away, right in front of him. A silver glow formed, eerie and unnatural, and out of the growing light came a face from Hawk's past, when he had another name and another legend. Out of the silver light, a dead man came walking. The late King John IV, once ruler of the Forest Kingdom, once Hawk's father when he had been Prince Rupert. The king looked just as he had in the final few moments before the last great battle to defend Forest Castle from the imminent demon army. The late king wore full armor, the breastplate etched and traced with defensive runes, and in his hand he carried that great and awful sword, Rockbreaker, one of the ancient and powerful infernal devices. When Rockbreaker spoke, the world trembled. The king's hair was gray, and his face was lined with age and pain and loss. But still, he held himself well, standing tall and proud, and utterly royal. Hawk had always found it sad that his father had only really learned to be a king at the very end of his life. He held his ground as his father approached and finally came to a halt before him. King John looked his son up and down, his gaze openly contemptuous.
I know who you are.
Of course you do. I don't suppose much is hidden from the dead. What are you doing here, father?
Your disgrace has raised me from my grave. You disappointed me, Rupert. You failed me. You failed your brother, and you failed in your duty to the land. I brought you into this world, and so I have a responsibility to remove you from it.
He lunged forward, swinging Rockbreaker with both hands. At the last moment, Hawk brought his axe up to block the blow. They circled each other slowly. Fisher was lost in the darkness for a while, too, before pushing away the fear and the panic the same way Hawk had. She also saw the silver light form and a familiar face walking out of it toward her. She took up a fighting stance, her sword held out before her, and the late Prince Harold came to a halt a respectful distance away from her. He looked just as she remembered him, tall, well-muscled, classically handsome. He was clad in rune-scored armor and carried in his hand the infernal device known as Flarebright. When that terrible blade spoke, the world burned. Harold looked her over slowly, his face cold and emotionless.
What are you doing here? I went to your tomb. I heard your message. I'll find your killer.
You should not be here. Your curiosity and trespass have brought you to a place with a dead walk. Here, old slights can be avenged, and old hurts eased. If you stayed at the castle, Julia, if you'd loved and stayed with me, I'd still be alive. I should never have trusted you.
He attacked her then, the long, deadly blade of the infernal device sweeping in a wide arc. Fisher met it with her own sword, and sparks flared in the darkness as Fisher held her ground. Fisher and Harold circled each other, launching attacks that held no mercy on either side.
This can't be Harold. He wouldn't do this. And Harold never trusted me. Never trusted anyone in his life. And since the infernal device should have shattered my ordinary sword by now, this isn't Harold.
She stepped back, not lowering her guard, but unwilling to continue the fight until she was sure just who and what she was fighting. Hawk was also beginning to wonder just who and what he was fighting when the king suddenly disengaged and backed away from him. Hawk didn't go after him. This couldn't be the king. He and his father made their peace with each other long ago. Someone was trying to pull his strings, and he'd never believed in playing someone else's game. And there'd been something damnably familiar about the skills of the person he'd been fighting. The answer was on the tip of his tongue when a hand grabbed his elbow firmly from behind and pulled him out of the dark and back into the light. Hawk and Fisher stood together, blinking dazedly in the sudden light of the chamber. Lament held them both by the elbows until he was sure they knew where they were. Then he let them go and stepped back to study them thoughtfully. The Seneschal was still in the doorway, looking confused. Hawk rubbed at his eye and realized he was right back by the chamber door again. He looked at Fisher and then at Lament.
We were fighting each other, weren't we?
Yes. You both reached a certain point, stopped dead, muttered a few words, and then attacked each other. It was quite a sight. You're both excellent fighters. And then you both suddenly stopped, so I seized the moment and hauled you back here.
You didn't see the darkness?
There was no dark. What happened?
The avoidance spell. It made us see things. People from our past tricked us into attacking each other.
Oh, damn! I hate being suckered that easily.
I have to wonder what other levels there are to the warding spell. Perhaps I should go in alone after all.
Nonsense. No one tells me where I can and cannot go in my own castle.
The Seneschal strode forward into the chamber before anyone could stop him. He felt the building pressure too, but brushed it briskly aside. The Seneschal was used to being in places where he wasn't supposed to be. In fact, he took pride in it. He strode on, his head thrust bullishly forward, his hands clenched into fists. He fiercely resented the very existence of the inverted cathedral in his nice, familiar castle, and he was in the mood to take out his anger on someone or something. Darkness blossomed suddenly around him, and he stopped. Out of the silver light came his grandfather, the legendary High Warlock, a man in black sorcerer's garb with frighteningly intense eyes.
I am very disappointed in you.
Oh, piss off. You're not my grandfather. He never gave a damn about me. He died still owing me 7 birthday presents. Now get the hell out of my way.
The Seneschal strode forward, walking right through the image of the High Warlock, and both the image and the darkness disappeared. The chamber reappeared around the Seneschal, who smiled triumphantly. The trapdoor was only a few feet ahead of him. The relentless pressure was as strong as a gale wind now. The Seneschal had to lean well forward as he pressed on, but he was damned if he'd be stopped now, so close to his goal. And that was when his heart stopped beating. His lungs stopped breathing, and he fell to the floor, dead as any doornail. Once again, Lament had to go into the chamber and pull out the lifeless body of the Seneschal. Lament laid him out on his back by the doorway. Fisher knelt beside him to do mouth-to-mouth while Hawk did vigorous compressions on his chest. He picked up a lot of emergency medical procedures working in the Haven Guard. The Seneschal jerked suddenly and he started breathing again, and Hawk and Fisher backed away from him. The Seneschal sat up slowly, clutching at his bruised chest with one hand. It was a while before he was able to explain what had happened, and the walking man nodded thoughtfully.
The next level of the avoidance spell. Presumably only the illusion of a heart attack rather than the real thing, which is why you were able to recover so quickly once I dragged you back here.
It was a bloody convincing illusion.
The Seneschal struggled to his feet while waving aside offers of assistance.
Oh, I'm going to have strong words with the mages about this. So, what do we do now? That layer of the spell will stop anyone who gets too close to the trapdoor.
Not necessarily.
Hawk gave Lament a hard look.
I can't help noticing that you walked in and out of this room twice without even hesitating. Didn't you feel anything?
No. As the walking man, I walk in straight lines to go where I must and do what I must. And because this is God's will made manifest, nothing can stand in my way or delay my journey. Including, it would appear, the avoidance spell of a certain magus. I see no reason why I shouldn't be able to walk right up to that trapdoor, unaffected by anything the wards can throw at me.
You knew that all along. So why did you let us go in first and trigger the defenses?
Because I wanted to see what they would do. I wanted to know what the magus was capable of.
Don't hit him, Isabel. We need him. And we did insist on going first.
Fisher glared at Lament. He smiled back, entirely undisturbed.
It seems to me that if we were all to walk into that room together, With all of you sticking very close to me, your proximity to my holy nature should be enough to protect you from the wards.
And if it doesn't?
Then I'll drag you back out, and you get to say I told you so. I will continue this quest alone.
He paused to look at the others in turn.
I would prefer company.
Yeah, just like the miner who takes a canary in a cage with him to check for bad air.
Exactly. I couldn't have put it better myself.
They all walked into the room together, Hawk and Fisher and the Seneschal pressing as close to Lament as they could get without actually climbing into his pockets. This time there was only the briefest feeling of an opposing pressure, which burst against the walking man's certainty. They crossed the empty chamber unopposed, and finally knelt beside the trapdoor in the floor, studying it carefully from different angles and what they hoped was a safe distance.
What the hell was that?
The Magus, perhaps?
Lament did not look at her, all his attention focused on the trapdoor.
Having his wards broken so abruptly was probably rather unpleasant for him. Or possibly the scream could have come from somewhere inside the inverted cathedral. Which means that whatever's in there knows we're coming and that we won't be easily stopped.
I wish I had your confidence. Must be wonderful to always be so sure of things.
Oh, it is. You have no idea. Faith means never having to say you're uncertain.
He leaned out over the trapdoor, studying it closely, but still careful not to touch it. Hawk watched him do it, momentarily distracted by a new thought. Harold Killer walked right through the Magus' strongest wards to reach him. But Lament hadn't been in the castle then, as far as anybody knew. Hawk frowned. The Lady of the Lake had said he already knew who killed Harold, but didn't want to admit it. Hawk smiled sourly. If so, it was news to him. Anyway, that would all have to wait until they'd finished their business inside the inverted cathedral and returned. Assuming any of them did return. Hawk made himself concentrate on the trapdoor. 6 square feet of unpolished wood held shut by a simple steel bolt. It looked straightforward enough. If anything, too straightforward. In fact, everything about it set off Hawk's worst instincts.
I have a really bad feeling about that trapdoor.
You're not alone. There's magic in that trapdoor. I can sense it. Strong magic, soaked into the wood itself. Entirely separate from the avoidance spell.
A booby trap. Presumably set to be activated by whoever is foolish enough to open the trapdoor. Let's see what happens when I push back the bolt from a safe distance.
Lament stood up and stepped well back. The others hurried to get behind him. Lament slowly pushed back the bolt with the steel tip of his long staff. Nothing happened until the bolt was all the way back. They caught a flash of something moving too quickly to be seen. The trapdoor, ripped free from its hinges, slammed against the ceiling overhead with vicious force. It stayed where it was. The 4 members of the investigating party craned their necks to get a good look at it.
If any of us had been leaning over the trapdoor when we opened it, part or all of us would have ended up as the meat in a very nasty sandwich.
Ouch! The Magus really did want to stop people getting in.
Fisher looked at the Seneschal.
Can you sense any more traps?
No.
The Seneschal frowned as he peered dubiously at the newly revealed gap in the floor.
But this opening is positively crawling with magic. There's so much power radiating from it, I can feel it in my bones. And I mean old magic, far beyond anything I'd expect the Magus to be capable of. I'd say we'd found our entrance to the inverted cathedral. And it gives me the creeps.
They all crowded around the open space, working up the nerve to peer in, while trying very hard not to think about the trapdoor overhead, still stuck to the ceiling. When they did finally look, all they could see was 6 square feet of drifting clouds. And not nice, fluffy, white cotton clouds, either. These clouds were dark and threatening, boiling and churning like a fast-building thunderstorm. Lament dipped the steel end of his staff into the clouds, and nothing happened. He slowly thrust the staff further and further in, until he was kneeling beside the square, with his arm fully extended and his hand nearly touching the clouds. He stirred the staff around for a while, to no obvious effect. He stood up again, withdrawing his staff. It seemed unaffected, though beaded here and there with drops of water.
Well, the next step requires a volunteer.
Why do I just know it's going to be me?
Because we need Lament for his power, the Seneschal for his magic, and I've got more sense. Guess who that leaves?
If anyone thinks I am just going to jump blindly into those clouds...
No, of course we don't think that. Far too many things could go wrong, and if you just disappeared, we'd have no way of knowing what. Since the cathedral is inverted, it could drop away into the earth for several hundred feet, or more. I have a coil of rope with me. We'll tie one end round your ankles and then lower you headfirst into the clouds. All you have to do is yell back once you've ascertained what's beyond them.
Hawk shook his head slowly.
I never did like heights.
Think of them as depths.
You're not helping, Isabel.
You'll be perfectly safe with all of us on the other end of the rope. If you see anything at all worrying, just yell out and we'll pull you back up.
If it's so safe, why aren't you doing it?
Because you're the hero. Sit down, and I'll tie your ankles together.
Oh, hell.
Hawk sat reluctantly down beside the open space. Lament's knots turned out to be excruciatingly tight, but comfortingly professional. Hawk waited until he was sure everyone had a good grip on the rope. He swung his feet out over the drop. He knew there was an awful lot of nothing beneath his feet. He just knew it. Back in Haven, there'd been a group of extreme sportsmen who climbed to the top of tall buildings, tied themselves to something secure, and then jumped off just for the thrill of it. Hawk had always considered them to be complete and utter lunatics. He took a deep breath and pushed himself off the edge and into the clouds.